Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where we give you, the investor, an inside view on some of the best and brightest small cap companies operating on the public markets today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Hey there, gurus. This is your host, Ethan Reyes, and you're listening to the latest episode of the EG Media Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Kate DeVarney, CSO of Titan Pharma, about how her company is combating opioid addiction. Stay tuned.
Titan is now a fully functional commercial organization. We've transitioned from being a development organization to a fully functional commercial organization over the last 6 months since we reacquired our lead product called Probuphine, which is indicated for the maintenance treatment of opioid use disorder in clinically stable patients who have been maintained on 8 milligrams a day or less of oral buprenorphine products. Titan's been around for about more than 20 years, closer to 25 years. And we originally developed Probuphine starting in the early 2000s. In 2012, we licensed it to a company called Braeburn Pharmaceuticals, and then they were going to be our commercial partner. And they launched the drug in 2016 and had a difficult time being successful in the commercial space with Probuphine. And so we reacquired Probuphine from them in late May of 2018. Since then, we have doubled in size. You know, we've gone from 12 people to almost 25 people. So we're still very small. We have a very targeted, strategic focus on our commercial efforts. We have a new chief commercial officer named Dane Halberg, Mr. Dane Halberg. We've got a small sales force. We've got a small medical science liaison team, medical affairs team. And we are really being very strategic about how we approach commercializing Probuphine in this relaunch arena. Let me just back up and tell you a little bit about what Probuphine is.
Sure.
So you mentioned the word Pronura.
Mm-hmm.
Pronura is our technology platform for delivering drugs for severe chronic medical illness. And the delivery is over a very long period of time, between 3 months and 6 months, or potentially even longer. And this is a very innovative and a novel treatment paradigm that is starting to become, I would even go as far as calling it the wave of the future in terms of drug delivery.
Mm.
And the reason for that is that if you can effectively deliver an efficacious and a safe drug through a long-term delivery system, then you avoid a lot of the pitfalls of trying to take a pill every day for your medical condition, regardless of what the medical condition is. So, you know, when somebody has a chronic medical condition like diabetes, for example, type 2 diabetes, and you have to take an oral medication every day to keep your insulin under control, people have every intention of doing that, but sometimes it's just hard to maintain compliance. If you have an implant placed under your skin that's delivering the medication to you 24/7, you don't have to remember to take a pill. And if you lose your bottle of pills, it doesn't matter because you're not relying on having to take that external medication. Now, when we're talking about, let's switch gears and talk about opioid use disorder, opioid addiction. This is a really severe, relapsing, remitting neurobiological disease. This is a brain disease. And people that develop opioid addiction have a very, very difficult time stopping taking the opioids. There are a limited number of medications now that are approved in the U.S. and in Canada. And by the way, you might want to even talk to somebody from Knight Pharmaceuticals, and I can put you in touch with a contact there, because Knight Pharmaceuticals is our Canadian licensing partner.
Mm.
They have all of the Canadian rights, and now Health Canada has approved Probuphine, and Knight Pharmaceuticals is selling it in Canada. And you might want to get some perspective from somebody at Knight.
Sure, absolutely.
So the ProNeuro platform is a way of combining a polymer, a safe polymer called ethylene vinyl acetate with a drug substance. And in the case of probuphine, the drug substance is called buprenorphine. Buprenorphine is the active ingredient in Suboxone, and in there's a monthly depot injectable called Sublocade. And I'm not sure if that's approved in Canada at this point. It is approved in the United States. Buprenorphine is, and I'm going to get into the pharmacology a little bit if you're interested.
Sure.
Okay. It's called a mixed partial agonist antagonist, a mixed partial opioid agonist antagonist, which makes it different than methadone. Methadone is a full opioid agonist, which means that it turns on that opioid receptor, the mu opioid receptor, it turns it on all the way, whereas a mixed partial agonist antagonist, it selectively binds to the mu opioid receptor, and it has a sort of a low level of activation, but it also blocks the receptor from having any other opioid molecule attached to it. So if you use heroin, for example, or if you used fentanyl or Vicodin or Percocet, you are not going to get high because the buprenorphine molecule is blocking that mu opioid receptor from being turned on by the full agonist.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's fantastic.
Okay. And so for that reason, it's a safe treatment for people with opioid use disorder. And in some cases, it's safer than methadone because you don't have the same risk of adverse events like respiratory depression if you take too much. You can overdose from any opioid, including buprenorphine. People have overdosed on buprenorphine, but it's typically in combination with alcohol and benzodiazepines. Methadone is pharmacologically very similar to heroin, and so if you take too much of it, you can overdose, and basically you stop breathing. You go into respiratory depression, you stop breathing, and then you die.
Oh, okay. Kate, I had some questions about the more technical side of the business as well. You brought up methadone. I was wondering, my analyst here had some great questions, one of them being the cost, especially in relation to something like methadone, which is, as far as I know as a layman, the predominant or at least most widely recognized treatment, again, to laymen. I was wondering about the cost benefit between, say, taking a daily dose of, say, methadone to the buprenorphine implant or the cost to administer. Like, what is the balance there or the difference between, say, methadone and buprenorphine, if I'm saying that right?
You're saying it perfectly. The cost for methadone, because it's been around for so long and it's generic, is low. The cost of oral, so let's compare apples to apples here.
Sure.
Oral methadone compared to oral buprenorphine products. The oral buprenorphine products are now generic, including the film. So there's a sublingual film. There are sublingual tablets. There are buccal films that are available. All these different formulations of the oral medication that you have to take every single day. Now, one of the main differences between methadone and oral buprenorphine is that you can have oral buprenorphine as an outpatient. You go to your doctor or your healthcare provider, and they will give you a prescription, and you can take it at home. It doesn't have to be observed. In the United States, I'm speaking about the United States now. I'm not that familiar with Canadian regulations. With methadone, typically you have to go to a methadone clinic every day. So there's cost associated with dispensing the methadone. In the United States, for people who achieve a certain level of clinical stability, you are permitted to give take-home methadone, but that takes a long time to get to that stage. And you have to have, for example, you have to have a locked safe. You go to your doctor's office, they give you the methadone, you have to put it in the safe, and you have to have it locked in the safe in order to be considered eligible to be given take-home methadone. Most people that are in methadone treatment have to go to a clinic every single day. The other difference, as I mentioned before, is the safety profile of methadone versus buprenorphine. If you are on methadone and you use heroin on top of it or another opioid, as people who have addiction oftentimes do, they test the system, you know, you run the risk of an overdose event there. If you are testing the system when you have buprenorphine on board, you have a much less lower risk of a bad event because, as I mentioned before, the buprenorphine is going to block the effect of the full agonist opioid. Which is not to say that you can't overdose when you're taking buprenorphine. You certainly can, but it's less likely.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now. Welcome back.
Okay, so as you said, probuphine is your drug, Proneura is the implant, the vehicle, and buprenorphine is the umbrella generic term. What would you say would be, say, the cost of administering the implant versus the costs of overviewing someone at a clinic? Are they comparable in any way? I assume it's much cheaper to simply install the implant and walk away for 3 to 6 months.
I'm not sure of that kind of a cost comparison. What I can tell you is in the United States, the retail cost is $4,950 for 6 months of treatment, $4,950 US for 6 months of treatment.
Okay.
And the way the treatment is delivered is that you go to the doctor's office and you have the implants placed under your skin in your inner upper arm in a brief procedure that the doctor is trained to do or the healthcare provider is trained to do. And then you return for treatment on, you know, on a regular basis. It might be every couple of weeks in the beginning. It might be then every month throughout the entire 6 months of treatment because the medication works best when it's combined with psychosocial interventions like drug counseling or a 12-step program or some kind of psychosocial program that helps you get your life back together.
Gotcha, gotcha. We only have a couple more minutes here. Let's see if we can squeeze a couple more in.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that only 5% of doctors are certified to prescribe buprenorphine. I assume there's a much higher percentage for those comfortable with prescribing methadone. Are those correct numbers in your opinion, and do you see that as an impediment to this drug becoming more widely used and available?
I don't know what the statistics are in the number of doctors who are able to prescribe buprenorphine right now in the U.S. I think it's probably in the neighborhood of about 40 or 50,000.
Mm.
When you think of the overall pool of doctors who are licensed and able to prescribe medication, and then you add on top of that nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, I imagine that 50,000 is a very small percentage. I don't know what the actual percentage is.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why there are fewer people who are able to prescribe buprenorphine versus methadone or any other opioid, and you can include OxyContin and other opioids in that class with methadone, is that in order to prescribe buprenorphine in the United States, you have to have a special waiver, which means you have to take an 8-hour course, can be online or in person, to learn how to prescribe it. It's the only opioid that's prescribed where you have to have this special training to prescribe it, and there are limits on how much you can prescribe.
Okay.
Limits on the numbers of patients that you can prescribe to in a year's time. There are no limits on how many patients you can give a prescription of Vicodin or OxyContin to.
Okay.
But there are limits on buprenorphine, which is, you know, it just, in, this is my personal opinion.
Sure.
It doesn't make any sense to me medically.
It does sound a little strange. Do you think we have time for one more here?
Yeah, of course.
I read somewhere that 25% of inmates in the United States are addicted to opiates. Of course, having such a vast prison population, that's a pretty big number. And I also read that only about 11% of those people are getting treatment. Now, you guys are involved in the penal system in Nevada, I believe. Tell me about that. Is this just a great story? Are you looking like what motivated you to get involved with prisoners who are, let's be real, probably one of the largest marginal populations in the United States?
Yeah. So what's motivating us to look at that population as potentially receiving real benefit from this treatment is the very high rate of overdose events, death, and recidivism that occurs when somebody is released from prison or from jail. It's an incredibly high rate. And the reason that happens, Ethan, is that jails and prisons are really behind the times in terms of providing medication-assisted treatment to people when they're incarcerated. That's beginning to change. There's beginning to be acceptance and medical programs that are starting to provide treatment to people that are in prison. Yeah, 25% of 3 million people, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people that have a severe neurobiological disorder and disease who, when they go into withdrawal and have cravings in prison and they're not receiving correct medical treatment for that, they are going to suffer. They're really going to suffer, and they could die. And there have been cases of people who died as a result of not receiving treatment when they were incarcerated and they were in opioid withdrawal. So that's really what's prompting our recognition of this patient population. And also the fact that, imagine that you or somebody you know has been incarcerated for a period of time and you are now being released back to your life, and you don't have any medication on board to protect you when you're released from going back and using the opioid again. And this is when the overdose events typically happen, because you've been incarcerated, you have the tolerance that you had developed to your opioid prior to incarceration was at a certain level. Once you have not been using over a period of time, and it can happen over the short as a couple of weeks. Go back out in the street and you use the same amount of heroin or fentanyl or whatever that you were using before when you had developed tolerance. Now all of a sudden you are at a very high risk for death from overdose, because your system, your brain, and your body is no longer able to tolerate that same amount. But you don't know that because you're naive, or you're not educated about it. You try using the same amount and you're likely to have a very bad outcome.
And how has just really quickly, last one, how has the reaction been? Has it been positive, the reaction to the treatment in prison?
We are, as you mentioned earlier, we're working on a pilot program with the state of Nevada, mm-hmm. Department of Corrections. And we've had a very good, from the key stakeholders there, a very good acceptance of this potential treatment.
Okay, perfect. So it hasn't been put in place yet. Still, okay, that's all you can say about it.
That's all I can say about it at this point. It is okay. It's a pilot project.
Okay, gotcha. Has it been put into play yet, or is it still in the prototype blueprint stage?
Oh, no, we have started the pilot project.
Oh, you have. You just can't talk about it. Okay, fair enough. Perfect.
And we're talking to other states as well about initiating similar programs.
Perfect. Kate, I do appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I'll let you go now. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ethan. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.